You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the William Hill National Football League podcast. Dave Kellner here, alongside Gil Alexander, our NFL betting expert stateside, to look forward to four big matches in this week's National Football League. Gil Alexander coming to me live from Washington DC on this Friday morning. Welcome along, Gil.
Hey DK, how are you? I wanted to travel to Washington so I could mire myself in the sadness that is the Redskins community today.
I wasn't even going to bring up the Redskins, Gil, but now that you mention it, disappointment last night against the New York Giants, and I think the first podcast we recorded this season, you said that Kirk Cousins was a turnover machine. I think those were the words you used, Gil, and he's proving you correct.
Well, it's sad because, you know, 80% of the time he looks like he's a competent quarterback, but he erases everything with, and he is a turnover machine because, and this is not just opinion, in the short amount of time that he's been in the league, he has turned the ball over at a historic rate. It is really, by the numbers, a historic rate. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of good in the NFL gets erased by that. You cannot turn over the ball, and as long as he does that, the Redskins, who otherwise look pretty deep, when he doesn't, could be good. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that'll erase everything.
Where's Robert Griffin III, Gil?
He is probably sitting on the couch next to you and me, Dave, at some point. We should look to our right or left. He might be there. He's not getting anywhere near the field these days. But I do have a prediction, and we'll leave the Redskins at this, but they have their bye after week 7. I think they'll be 2-5. I said this after week 1. I think they'll be 2-5. I think the owner will go crazy. I think he'll fire the head coach. He'll put in an interim coach, and he will demand that Robert Griffin III play the rest of the game. Those are my three bold Redskin predictions.
I like it. Let's get stuck into this week. Actually, before we get properly into these matches that we're covering this week on the podcast, Gil, I just wanted to ask you about the point after touchdown. As
yes,
every NFL fan knows, that rule changed in the off-season, and the point after touchdown's gone from a mere formality to almost a formality now, 99% to 94%. Have you had any exchanges with NFL bettors as to whether this might affect the spread in the future and whether it will change the key numbers looking ahead as well? I find it interesting because we've only really seen the Pittsburgh Steelers go for two in what you would consider a standard game time situation.
Yeah, I did ask. I had the opportunity to moderate a panel at the Super Contest weekend in Las Vegas a few weeks ago, and I asked the panel, that was the very question I asked them when the Eagles came up. Chip Kelly, who had coached at the University of Oregon in college, he went for two all the time from the moment the game started, first touchdown to the end. He was a guy who went for two in college. So the speculation was, will a guy, now that we have this rule change, and the rule change, just to be clear, is used to just kick an extra point from, you know, with the ball snapped at the 2-yard line, or you go for two with the ball snapped at the 2-yard line. Well, this year, as you said, they decided, you know, let's make it a little more difficult. Instead of giving this a 99% rate, which is just a formality, let's put the extra point for 1 point back to the 15-yard line. In essence, you're kicking a 32-yard field goal at that point, and that has reduced over time. The rate of that is 94%, so a 0.94 point win expectancy. And already, over the NFL in the course of 2 weeks, they've missed more extra points than they have all of last year. So it's having its desired effect. But the question to the panel was, with this new ability to go for two, basically by default, because people now will be less inclined to go for one, is that going to affect your handicapping? Will a guy like Chip Kelly in an Eagles game, when you're handicapping Eagles games, will that affect your handicapping? Chip Kelly's not doing it, but it's the Steelers who are doing it, and they are unabashedly doing it. And Mike Tomlin, their head coach, says during the week, we're practicing it, and we'll continue to do so. But the handicapper's answer, Dave, was, you know, we really can't on a day-to-day basis until we see someone show a penchant for that behavior. Well, we're seeing a penchant for that behavior in Tomlin. So I think they ought to, or we ought to as handicappers. And I do think key numbers become interesting in Steelers games. 7-3, those are key numbers that a large percentage of NFL games fall on. Well, if 3 is a number that I think 9.4% of games fall on historically in favor of the home team, I can see that very easily dropping to about 8% over time. Now, that's a different thing than trying to handicap any individual game. But yes, I think if a spread is 3 on the Steelers, maybe it leans you a little more in their direction if you're already bent that way.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be intriguing to see how that pans out throughout the course of this season, Gil. We were going to start off with the New Orleans at Carolina. That's one of the televised games here in the UK, but there's no spread on the board here with William Hill at the moment with concerns about Drew Brees' fitness, Gil. It sounds as if Brees is going to play, but with that uncertainty, we'll leave that game for the time being.
Okay. Yeah, it's a rotator cuff, and we don't know for sure.
Let's start with the Cincinnati Bengals at the Baltimore Ravens. 6 p.m. start time here in the UK. The Bengals on the money line are 6-5. The Ravens are 5-7. And this spread set at 2.5. The Bengals plus the points at 20-21. And the Ravens with a little extra juice here, minus 2.5 at 20-23. Any line change here, Gil? We're showing the Ravens with the extra juice at 2.5.
Yeah, not really any significant line change in this one. You know, the Ravens started at 2.5, and it's still 2.5. You're right, there's a little extra juice, but that's where it stayed. And I think, you know, the reaction is, oh, the Bengals are 2-0, the Ravens are 0-2. How are the Ravens favored here? The Bengals have looked so good weeks 1 and 2, and the Ravens quite the opposite in losing to Denver and then more egregiously last week to the Raiders. Who loses to the Raiders? But this is exactly what the spread ought to be, and I actually like the Ravens here for several reasons. One, the Ravens schedule to start off the season, and again, this is sort of the geography part of it. They're an East Coast team. They had to play at Denver in the Mountain Time Zone. They had to play at Oakland in the Pacific Time Zone. They did stay out west. They didn't travel back home, but it's still a really tough way to start your season, and they're finally getting their home opener. And the Ravens have never in their franchise history, since moving to Baltimore, they've never started 0-3, and I don't expect them to here. They're too good of a football team. And we talk about overreaction headed into Week 2. Well, I think it applies into Week 3 as well. There's so many players who haven't performed well league-wide. You know, Andrew Luck comes to mind as a guy who we know to be one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the NFL. He hasn't performed. Teams haven't performed up to snuff yet, and I think the Ravens are one of them, and I think they'll show up here and they'll beat the Bengals.
This is so important for the Baltimore Ravens as well, isn't it? It's almost a must-win, this divisional clash for them. I think what surprised people, Gil, about the performance against the Oakland Raiders is this team, under John Harbaugh, have been known for their defensive stability. They gave up 37 points and 448 yards to the Oakland Raiders. That was shocking, really.
It is, and then you look at the Raiders, and the Raiders are one of those teams that are capable of that kind of thing every once in a while. They're a tough team to bet against, the Raiders, because that offense is so volatile. They could really lay an egg, or they could go crazy on the Ravens, you know, and they could do that to other teams as well. So it's not, you know, I don't want to say that giving up that many points to the Raiders is a good thing, but it's not the most outlandish thing in the world. I think the key stat here for me, and that doesn't swipe aside what you said about their defense, because it's obviously a concern, but I think the key thing here headed into the Bengals are a few stats about Andy Dalton specifically going against that defense that you mentioned. And at Baltimore in his career, and that's, you know, a handful of games at this point, without Terrell Suggs on the field. So let's take the plays as a collective where Terrell Suggs has not been on the field. And as we know, Terrell Suggs, the Ravens standout defender, he's been a real issue. You know, he's been a real factor as to why the Ravens have struggled early on. But if we take the plays in which Andy Dalton has played at Baltimore without Terrell Suggs, his total QBR score collectively is 22.9. That's out of a scale of 0 to 100. So he is well below average, even with a Ravens defense that didn't have its stud in there. Zero touchdowns, two picks. Dalton is 31-10-1 lifetime straight up outside of their division. But when inside the AFC North, the division that they're in, Baltimore and Cincinnati, Andy Dalton is just 11-13 as a starting quarterback. So he's got some history here where he struggles against not only the Ravens, but the division itself.
Have they got the capabilities to get pressure on Dalton in the pocket? Because you mentioned his numbers there. Historically as well, he's good with time. But when the pressure comes, when the pressure arrives, that's when his QBR rating drops through the floor, Gil.
Yeah, and, you know, we can say that about many quarterbacks. We can say it about even the great Andrew Luck, right? You know, he's experiencing pressure the first couple weeks, and he can be a bit of a turnover machine himself in those situations. But it certainly applies to a guy like Andy Dalton. You can change any quarterback, even the great ones, into a much more ordinary quarterback if you're constantly pressuring him. And Dalton has this history of being pretty good during the regular season and then going to tank in the playoffs. Why in the playoff has he stunk? And it's changed on a dime in the playoffs. I remember a game that the Bengals hosted against the Chargers a couple of years ago where the Bengals looked great in the first half. The Chargers went into the locker room. They said, let's pressure the hell out of him second half. And they just turned the game around. So that is a key. And I do think the Ravens at home will be able to generate that rush. I'm sure that's their strategy headed into this one.
Baltimore Ravens, the pick in the early game then, at -2.5 at 20-23 for Gil. Let's move on to the 9:25 p.m. Start time. The Buffalo Bills at the Miami Dolphins. The Bills on the money line, 5-4. The Dolphins, 20-29. The Bills getting 3 points here with extra juice at 5-6. The Dolphins -3 is even money. A couple of headline offers here with William Hill as well. LeSean McCoy to score a touchdown and the Buffalo Bills to win is 100-30, and Jarvis Landry to score a touchdown and Miami to win is 5-2. Here with William Hill, this is a divisional matchup, this one in the AFC East. Both teams are chasing the Jets and the Patriots in the division, having started 1-1. What I find amazing about this match, Gil, is how quickly the narrative can change in the National Football League. The Bills, under Rex Ryan, went from the meanest defense in the NFL after that demolition of the Indianapolis Colts to glorified show ponies just a week later, Gil, after being shredded by the New England Patriots. They're probably somewhere in between, Gil, but it's incredible how they've gone from stout defensively to shocking in the space of a week.
Yeah, you're right about narratives changing in the National Football League, and that is so true for every week, and that's big, one of my biggest complaints about the American media when talking about the NFL is you can see the same guy. Someone should splice together videos of the same media just changing their tunes from week to week and then back again. But Buffalo, you're right. I guess the question here is which Buffalo defense shows up, right? The one that looked so great against Andrew Luck or the one that got just thrashed by the great Tom Brady. But you do have to sort of focus on that sentence. It was Tom Brady. It's sort of, you know, its own thing. And I think the main thing we have to think about with the Bills defense is, well, let's look at a broader sample size. And I get this from ESPN and a gentleman named Mike Sando, who does such a great job at ESPN with statistics and advanced statistics. The Bills defense, since the beginning of the 2014 season, since the beginning of last season, they are number one in defensive expected points allowed. That's an advanced metric for how they are really performing on a football field based on similar plays that other teams in other situations, similar situations that historically occur over the same time span. So the Bills defense is really second to none when you look at it that way. The Dolphins defense, on the other hand, Dave, which comes in also with, you know, a lot of expectation this year. They didn't sack Blake Bortles once last week against the Jaguars. Ndamukong Suh, their big free agent pickup, I don't know that they've gotten that much so far from him. Now, we'll talk about Detroit later. Detroit has really suffered from not having Suh, but I'm not sure that the Dolphins have really benefited that much quite yet from having Suh. And in the past 8 games, we talk about the Bills defense being number one in defensive expected points allowed since the start of the 2014 season. Well, over the past 8 games, the Dolphins are dead last in the NFL in expected points allowed on defense. Dead last, Dave. The Dolphins. So I think Tyrod Taylor will have some success there. Still don't like this game from a betting opportunity. It's just too nebulous for me, but I would lean Bills getting the points here.
What do you make to their 1-1 record? The Miami Dolphins win at Washington, narrow loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a really intriguing match for me because you mentioned Tyrod Taylor. He still managed to put up points against the Patriots. You'd expect him to have a good week against the Dolphins. And you'd also expect LeSean McCoy to go to work on the ground against the Miami Dolphins as well. So I think I'm with you, leaning Bills here.
Yeah, you know, and Ryan Tannehill, who we'd like to think of as this up-and-coming quarterback, by the way, 21st in total QBR this season. So again, just through two games, let's not go crazy, but just through two games, he's been below average league-wide as well. You're right, LeSean McCoy has really done much for the Bills first couple weeks. You expect him to break out here at some point, whether it's this week or not. Who knows? But Tyrod Taylor, and forgive me if we've talked about this on previous shows, Dave, it used to be when we were kids that NFL quarterbacks would come up by sitting on the bench for a few years, and they would hold a clipboard for a few years, and then they would be allowed to play in their fourth season, and they'd be well prepared. Now, there were exceptions to that. By and large, that's how quarterbacks came up when we were kids. And today, with the salaries that are given to these rookies and salary caps, it doesn't work that way. These quarterbacks are typically thrown into the fire. Well, Tyrod Taylor is a throwback in the fact that he's getting his first starts in this league in year five. He is well prepared to be a viable quarterback in the NFL, and I think we'll only see good things from him in the future, and I think we'll see good things from him this week. The Dolphins could very well be 0-2, Dave. They could have very well lost to the Redskins were it not for a Jarvis Landry punt return for a touchdown. So shaky in Miami, but again, division matchup, never know what's going to happen here.
Let's move on to the Monday 1:30 a.m. Match, late Sunday night this one. Denver Broncos at the Detroit Lions. The Broncos 20-33, the Lions are 29-20. The spread here set at Broncos minus 3, 20-23, and the Lions plus 3, 20-21. The points is 44.5, under 10-11, the over 10-11. Unbelievable win last weekend for the Broncos over the Chiefs, Gil. The NFL never fails to entertain, and that was a wild finish, that one, Gil.
It's one of the epic finishes ever. 36 seconds, two touchdowns by the Broncos in 36-second span in the final minute to beat the Chiefs, to come from 7 down to 7 up. Of course, Jamal Charles fumble return for a touchdown being the game winner. I ask a question on my podcast every week about the NFL slate, and I ask the panelists, I go, if you had to bet every single one of these games, but you had one pass out of the 16 games, a game that you just want no part of, which would the game be? This would be the game for me.
Really?
Yes. Denver 3-point favorites at Detroit. I have no sense of the Lions at this point. They have no identity to me. And I am still really the biggest question of this game through 2 weeks remains, despite the fact that the Broncos are 2-0, Dave. What do we really know about Peyton Manning and his arm strength at this point? I am very dubious. I just think Father Time has caught up with him. And despite all the positives that I can mention here about the Broncos, I just don't know. This seems like a spot. My intuition tells me that Detroit's going to show up here. I don't like this game, but certainly the Broncos are going to try to establish a running game. Their coach, Gary Kubiak, is obsessed with trying to establish a running game, and I think he senses Peyton Manning's age. He wants to preserve Peyton Manning's arm for more meaningful games later in the season, of course, the postseason as well. And the Broncos have had no success through 2 weeks on the ground. C.J. Anderson, 24 carries, have gone for no gain or negative yards so far. Ronnie Hillman's been stuffed at her behind the line of scrimmage on 7 of his 21 carries. And Manning has been sacked 7 times. They want to establish the run. Maybe this is the team to do so against, because Detroit's run defense has been terrible. From the number one rush defense in the NFL last year, they were gashed for 199 against Minnesota last week. They're giving up 147 on average through two games. That's near the bottom of the league. So maybe this is the game for Denver to run the ball and run it successfully.
It's weird, isn't it? I'm trying to compute the fact that Peyton Manning is there under center, Gil, but really it's the Denver Broncos defense that's keeping the team relevant at the moment.
Yeah, they've got the number one pass defense in the NFL through 2 weeks. Again, 2 weeks, but, you know, interesting to note that they've been that successful. And we talked about expected points allowed in the last segment when talking about the Bills and the Dolphins and talking about the other game that we did before that with the Ravens, although we didn't talk about expected points in that game. But I'll go to expected points here once again, the advanced ESPN metrics. The Broncos, number one in offensive expected points allowed the last three seasons with Peyton Manning. Since Peyton Manning's gotten in Denver, no team has been as efficient as the Denver Broncos offense. First two games this year, dead last since week nine of last year. As a matter of fact, if we take it back all the way to week nine through the first two games of this year, dead last. So it's funny how that has fallen on its face. But defensively, number one defense in expected points allowed since week nine of last year. So, I mean, you have an identity, as you point out, that is completely flipped on its head with the Broncos. So all of a sudden, we got to start thinking about this team as a defensive team in Peyton Manning's golden years.
The one thing I'm thinking about here as well, Gil, I don't know if this has affected your thinking on this game, and you've mentioned it as the one game that you would stay away from this weekend. This, in my mind, is it for Detroit. If they don't win this game, they're going to the Seahawks in next week's nationally televised game on Monday Night Football. How does that affect their thinking here? I think they've got to win this.
It's a great point. It's a great point, and something we don't talk enough about, or at least I don't talk enough, which is, and I have a gentleman on my show, Marco D'Angelo, a veteran Las Vegas handicapper who's been doing it for 35 years. He always talks about the NFL schedule and how that affects the minds of human beings. He's not so much into statistics as he is just to the natural rhythms of how people think. And you're right. Imagine you're the Detroit Lions, and this is part of the reason why I just don't like this game. You're 0-2. Historically, if you're 0-2, it's already tough to make the playoffs. If you're 0-3, it's virtually impossible. And you know, as you point out, Dave, that you've got this game at Seattle on the horizon next week. Seattle is notoriously the hardest place to win a football game. Well, here you are at home in prime time. The nation will be watching. There will be no other games to distract from this particular game. Everyone's going to be watching you and to see how good you are. You've got to think, as human beings, when you throw all of that into the mix, you're going to play your best game all around, and the Lions are going to go all out, and that's why they are a very live home underdog in this game today.
We finish, Gil, with the Monday Night Football match Tuesday, early hours of Tuesday morning here in the UK. The Kansas City Chiefs at the Green Bay Packers, and the Chiefs are 5-2, the Packers 1-3. And on the spread, the Kansas City Chiefs getting 6.5 points at 10-11, the Packers minus 6.5 at 10-11. Really looking forward to this matchup, given the situational aspect of the clash, Gil. Both come into this off the back of huge games in their season. The Packers gained revenge over the Seahawks. The Chiefs, as we've already mentioned on the podcast, lost against the Broncos in a divisional clash. Who does this matchup at this point favour? The team that's on the high after the big win, or the team that is seething after a big loss, Gil?
Well, I think we know the answer to that, and let's start there because we just ended the last game with the sort of emotional state that a team is in. And by the way, when I say the Lions are a live dog, it still doesn't mean I want to take them necessarily. But I think the Chiefs are the team you have to look for here. They're getting 6.5 points. The Chiefs are on extra rest. On that extra rest, as you recall, as we talked about, they lost that heartbreaking game to the Broncos in which their best player, by any one's measure, Jamaal Charles, fumbled the game away, literally. So the Chiefs now on the extra rest are going into Lambeau Field. They're getting all those points. And you got to say to yourself, they want to make amends from a nationally televised game to this new nationally televised game. They're going to be completely fired up to make amends for that. On the other hand, the Packers come off this big revenge win against the Seahawks. And you know, I don't love talking about revenge. I think people make too much of that in the NFL from week to week or from division games from last year to another. But when you lose in the NFC Championship game as dramatically as the Packers lost to the Seahawks last year, to come in and play them at home and to get the win, it's a very satisfying emotional win for the Packers. And now you get the Chiefs the next week who are, you know, in the other conference. You, of course, you want to win the game, but I don't know that laying 6.5 is the best betting opportunity. You know, I really like the Chiefs here getting all those points.
We've got to talk about Aaron Rodgers, as is so often the case at Lambeau Field, Gil. I'll just spin you through his numbers following that win against Seattle. 18 consecutive home games now without an interception. He's attempted 539 passes, thrown for 43 touchdowns, a passer rating of 124.0. That streak stretching back to December 2012. So obviously, he's a tough fish to fry, Aaron Rodgers, and it's going to be difficult for the Chiefs. But I know you are siding with the Chiefs plus 6.5. It is worth reiterating those numbers every time you come to a game like this, though, involving the Packers.
It sure is, because they're video game numbers. Those aren't real numbers you just mentioned. Those are from a video game. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, that if you don't turn the ball over in the NFL, you're not going to lose a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that simple. At some point, those streaks are going to end, but it's incredible. There's never been anything equivalent to that. But, here's the one thing, and you can't take anything away from Aaron Rodgers, but the Chiefs' defense has really brought the heat so far through two games this year. They've got 8 sacks, 3 from Justin Houston, who's, I believe, had a sack in 8 straight now for him. And Green Bay's going to be without their right tackle, Brian Bulaga, who's having knee surgery for a second straight week. So that's a major concern for the Packers in trying to prevent that Chiefs pass rush. And even the great Aaron Rodgers, who's so adept at moving the pocket when he feels pressure, he just sort of slithers out there as calm as could be and still makes an amazing play. Eventually, if you bring enough heat on him, he'll succumb too. But the real thing also for me is that the Packers' rush defense still hasn't gotten any better.
Yes.
You know, they're surrendering 5.3 yards per carry. That's second to worst in the NFL. And we talked about Jamaal Charles coming in, one of the best running backs in the NFL, wants to look good after fumbling the game away 10 days ago. So I think that's a good matchup for the Chiefs. And then I'm not sure, as we do this podcast here about 48 hours before Sunday's games and about 72-plus before the Monday nighter, what Eddie Lacy's status is. You might be able to tell me better, Dave, but it could be Eddie Lacy, it could be James Starks at this point for the Packers. So that's also an uncertainty for the Packers.
He looks unlikely to play at the moment from what I've read online, Gil. It looks like it could be James Starks, and Devontae Adams has been limited in practice, but he's thought probable. So I think Eddie Lacy unlikely, and Devontae Adams probable at the moment.
Yeah, if this were a 3-point spread, if this was a 4-point spread, my thinking might be different here. But if you're giving me 6.5, I'm not going to overreact to what I saw from the Chiefs last week. Chiefs are still a good little football team, and the Packers are in that sort of down game after Seattle. The Chiefs, I like the Chiefs here getting all those points.
It's worth noting as well, Alex Smith has been to Lambeau Field and won before as well, which a lot of other quarterbacks haven't experienced that feeling. Maybe he'll be able to draw on that. He has been there with the San Francisco 49ers and won at the Packers before.
Yes, it is worth noting because that environment will not intimidate him like it will others, even though, by the way, through two games, Smith has been atrocious. But his total QBR is 25.5, but a lot of guys have been bad, right? Andrew Luck's 28.5. Those numbers through two games, I wouldn't go crazy about them. Alex Smith will be fine, and I think the Chiefs show up here on Monday night.
Just to throw one at you from left field here, Gil, have you seen anything through the first 2 weeks that's affected your thinking in terms of antipost, in terms of future bets?
Yeah, I think that the Seahawks, now that they've gotten Cam Chancellor back, I think I feel a little bit better about them. Had they not gotten Cam Chancellor back, my answer to that question would have been, oh yeah, I'm pretty bearish right now on the Seahawks. At 0-2, in a conference with the Packers and the Cardinals, you know, the Packers already beating them, so in a tie, in the event of a tie, the Packers are going to get the playoff game at Lambeau. But now that they have Cam Chancellor back, they got a couple home games in front of them, I'm okay with the Seahawks. New England is still, for me, the team to beat in the AFC, but I still like the Colts, even though they're 0-2. Mm. The Colts were my other futures play, because the Colts started 0-2 last year as well, and then they rattled off 10 out of 12. So again, the answer to your question is probably not quite yet. I'm still satisfied with the bets I have from before the season. And that applies to the bad teams, too, just in terms of assessing bad teams. I think the bad teams really still, by and large, are bad. Nothing really. There's nobody through 2 weeks where I'm like, huh, got to watch them. Catch me in a couple weeks, and maybe I'll have a different answer.
Good stuff. Thank you, Gil. And before we finish, let's get your five best bets this week, Gil. And I think for maybe the first time this season, you might have included a couple of games that we previewed here.
Yeah, let's talk about the two that we did preview, and I won't harp on them anymore. The Chiefs are one of them at +6.5 at Green Bay for all the reasons we stated. And the Baltimore Ravens, giving 2.5, are another one of my picks, hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. The 0-2 Ravens giving 2.5 to the 2-0 Bengals. So it's Chiefs and Ravens off the top, the Chiefs, of course, being the last game on the schedule. The other three for me are the aforementioned Indianapolis Colts, another 0-2 team that are giving, what are they giving now, just 3 points?
3 points, yes. Titans.
Yeah, again, Andrew Luck has looked miserable through 2 weeks. Nothing could have gone worse for him, but he played against a really good Bills defense and a really good Jets defense, and the Colts are going to figure it out. Again, it's so easy to recency is the word we use for it here. What we see in recent times, we let it affect how we assess teams in a far more weighted fashion than we ought to. And I think the Colts will be fine. And if we think about these two teams from our assessments of them before the season, and we heard that the Colts were only giving 3 at Tennessee, we would be pounding the Colts.
Yeah.
So I really do like the Colts here, giving 3 as my third pick. Even though, again, Andrew Luck responsible for 6 turnovers this season, 13 division wins in a row, though I like the Colts here.
We know as well with the Colts, as you mentioned, they're going to turn things around, and those turnovers even out throughout the course of a season, and they might have T.Y. Hilton back in the fold this week as well.
Yeah, might have T.Y. Hilton, which is Andrew Luck's security blanket. So I think they'll show up. And again, it's against a rookie quarterback. I know we like Marcus Mariota, but it's only game 3.
Mm.
We'll be okay there with the Colts. I think that's a solid pick. So the Colts are my third. The Falcons are my fourth, Dave, going up into Dallas against Brandon Whedon and the Cowboys. Cowboys without Whedon, Cowboys without Dez Bryant, they're without Orlando Scandrick. I know they're 2-0, but the Falcons' defense looks so live under Mike Quinn, and I think they give Brandon Whedon some fits. I like Atlanta giving just a point at Dallas, so it's basically a pick 'em. And then pick number 5, and now, of course, I'm trying to think, what was my fifth pick? Oh, yes, the San Francisco 49ers. And that really comes down to how many points they're getting. They're getting 6.5 at Arizona. Arizona's been real good. Carson Palmer's been spectacular. They're 15-2 in their last 17 games under Carson Palmer. But they haven't played anybody really yet. They've played the Saints and the Bears, which before the season we might have been like, those are two pretty good teams, I guess. But Drew Brees appears to be really hurt. The Bears are still the Bears, Didn't think too much of them before the season. I should amend that. And now they get a Niners team that didn't look good against the Steelers at all. But I think they're far better than that. I think we'll get more of that Niners team that we saw opening week. You're giving me 6.5 in a division game, I'll take all those points. I think Colin Kaepernick and that offense keeps pace enough to cover. So San Francisco would be my fifth pick. So it's the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Colts, the Falcons, and the 49ers for me.
Superb, as per usual, Gil. And your podcasts available, and you can find the links to those podcasts at Beating the Book. Your Megapod is out now, Gil.
Yes, Megapod is out and ready for consumption, sir. I appreciate the plug.
No, it's very good. I'll be listening later on this evening. Thank you, Gil, and we'll catch up next week.
Thank you, Dave, as always. Appreciate it. Good luck to everybody.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.